Music from Jim Cole. He's the guy that James Taylor sounds a lot like. A Lamp Unto My Feet. We heard from Annie Herring to The King, and we heard from First Call, The Breath of God. 11 and a half minutes after the hour now on a Monday morning, a sparkling, bright, sunny Monday morning that Heike has just informed me is going to turn to snow.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I could have gone all day without hearing that, but that's okay. This is Minnesota, and that's why we're here. We're just savoring this sort of thing. Dave Dalton-Punt is with us this morning, and Dr. Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas, is here as well. Don is our resident biochemist and, of course, a board member at creationmoments.com, and we share with Don thoughts on creation and evolution and science and faith about this time every Monday morning. Don, welcome. How are things in Garden Valley today?
Well, good morning, everyone. Things are actually warming up. we had a little bit of a cool spell, but we didn't get 6 or 7 or 10 inches of snow.
Well, tell me, what is cool in Garden Valley?
Oh, well, if it gets down in the 50s, it's cool.
Well, we have yet to get up into the 50s this year.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's frigid. It's freezing where you are.
Yeah. Actually, right now, 27 degrees we're looking at outside. So, but the snow is going, and I'm sure the old Sol will catch up with it sooner or later and get rid of the snow, and we'll see some grass. And I have yet to see a robin. Heike, have you noticed any robins
yet? Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Were they
actually,
feet
the other
up
day,
or feet
I
down?
Took a picture of a tree that had about 17 or 18 of them in there, and my cat was stalking them all.
They were afraid to touch the ground because they would have been up to their little beaks in white stuff, I suspect.
Yep. Yep, I saw a cardinal at my mother's house down by the Iowa border yesterday. Hey, that was kind of fun.
Do they have spring down there, down in Iowa yet?
Yeah, they had a lot of rain yesterday, and it melted a lot of the snow. There isn't much for ground cover yet, just some snow banks on the north side of buildings, that kind of a thing.
So like flooding, probably, what's on their mind these days, I imagine.
Yeah, the farmers are thinking about getting in the fields and, you know, hoping that the rain will come and go, and then they can dry up and get in the fields.
Well, Don Clark has forwarded us an article, and then Heike's had a chance to look at it, and David's had a chance to look at it. And this kind of reminds me, David, remember the Johnny Carson bit on The Tonight Show? What did he call when he made predictions? Where actually what he did is he would read the answer. The Amazing Carnac, yeah. This is kind of like, this is an article about retrospective predictions. Which sounds like a non sequitur to me, Don. What are they talking about here with respect to global warming and retrospective predictions?
Well, this is a type of study where you go back and you look at the actual data, the historical data, and in this case, it's talking about global warming. So you take a global warming model, and then you go back in your data and correct your global warming model to the actual data. And then you say, Eureka, I now have a model that predicts the actual data. So it's a little bit like if you knew what the stock market was going to do. Well, historically, you take the ups and the downs of the stock market, you develop a model based on a number of different parameters. And then you say, you know, Eureka, I've found a model which predicts the stock market historically.
Uh-huh.
But you still have no idea what it's going to happen in the future.
But do you end up with, I mean, there must be some reason for going through this exercise to get a better computer model. Can they now predict with more certainty what really is going to happen in the future?
Well, that's what they think, obviously. Mm-hmm. Through going through this exercise, they actually found a couple of things that are of relative interest. First is that, hey, guys, we thought carbon dioxide was the big culprit in the global warming. And we find out, lo and behold, it has very little effect. Well, other scientists have been saying this for years, that carbon dioxide isn't the problem. And we've spoken about on this program before how carbon dioxide is actually sucked up by the ocean through
a
natural process.
These deep whirlpools down on the near the South Pole that actually take in carbon dioxide and reprocess it.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And you know, deposited as limestone and things things of that nature. But excuse me, the what what they actually are saying is that, well, it looks like methane and ozone and hydrofluorocarbons could be our culprit here and have much greater effect on the climate than our climate change as than carbon dioxide. So the good news is that all the carbon tax that the United Nations and the world wants to impose on us has again, once again, shown to be a frivolous act and is not something that we should be doing at all, because the science is bearing out that CO2 isn't the problem.
So are we saying then that
we can exhale then, right? Is that what you're saying? We can exhale?
You can exhale. You can have cows, those type of things.
Your cows are allowed to pass gas in
the pasture. We can live. Yes, we can live. Mm-hmm. And, the CO2 thing never did make any sense in the beginning, because the more CO2 you have, the better the plants like it. And so you're going to have more plant growth in and of itself. And, for us down here in Texas, that can be a problem, because now you got more weeds and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And you've got to fight that back. But, overall, it's a good thing, because you have a greater source of food.
Well, we've said a number of times here that the Earth tends to balance itself. It tends to correct imbalances. It's just the natural order of things. It's the way God made it to work.
That's correct.
It heals itself,
So these folks are saying basically that, hey, methane, ozone, well, ozone's created in the atmosphere by radiation bombarding oxygen and to create ozone. And you might have recalled several years ago the ozone scare. We've got holes in the ozone.
Yep.
And that's caused by, lo and behold, the hydrofluorocarbons was what they were predicting.
When they changed a lot of laws based upon that science, didn't they? I mean, refrigerants and things all changed over. Air conditioning units all use different chemicals now.
That's right. And so I'm still experiencing that legislation, because I've got some old air conditioning units in my houses. And I had a AC guy out this past week to fix one of my units, and he says, you know, I can't get this free. Well, I can get the Freon that your unit uses, but what used to be something like $30, let's say a pound, mm-hmm. is now $700.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. So the major manufacturer, DuPont, mm-hmm. is no longer making it. And so whatever supplies are out there in the market, the prices are just going crazy. Okay. So, I mean, that's what favorable legislation does for you.
Favorable legislation based on iffy science.
Now, and I don't think it's ever been necessarily proven that hydrofluorocarbons actually it caused much of effect at all.
Has it been proven that there is, in fact, global warming? Because I noticed a lot of the terminology is changing now. People who used to refer to global warming are now simply referring to climate change, which to me seems absolutely natural and normal.
Yes, they are now referring to it as climate change and not global warming, because, sometimes it's warm and sometimes it's cold, and whatever it is, it's changing. Yeah.
I actually heard some psychology behind dropping the term global warming, because in reality, most people would like it to be a couple of degrees warmer. So it almost subconsciously defeats the purpose. If you call it global warming, then you're going to get people to subconsciously behave badly and create more global warming. If you use that term, if you call it climate change, then they're not going to wish for it.
Aha. Uh-huh. And so it's not, we were wrong before, so we're going to generalize a little more so we can pretend we're right.
So that person, were their arms and legs tied in knots, or was it just their head? I mean, the thinking, the circular logic behind this whole thing has always been just, you know, head shaking. I mean, I remember, you know, people talking about global warming when I was in college. I mean, back in the dark ages, you know, back just when the covered wagons came across the plains. And, you know, I scratched my head and I'm saying, what? Run this by me again? What? And, you know, and then a half an hour later I doze off or go do something else or something, but it's never made any sense to me.
Well, but it has science behind it, see, and we automatically give credit. It's presented to us as being scientific.
It has a bunch of scientists who concur or agree that this might be the case, and it's not every scientist.
Well, that, yeah. But we're
talking to one right now that doesn't buy into the program.
Yeah, but we don't hear from Dr. Clark on a national or global level. We hear from institutionalized science.
Oh. That buys
that buys into a certain philosophy. That we're fighting that tendency here.
I've talked to scientists. I've heard of scientists who said no, we don't. I don't necessarily buy into it. Now, many of the scientists have been very polite, and they've not said the words hogwash.
Yeah,
and they've not said hooey, mm-hmm. and they've said, you know, they've spoken in their normal vernacular, and they've, you know, used large words and big long sentences, but if you boil it down, they've said hogwash and hooey.
You know what's disturbing me? I spent some time over at Internet Monk this weekend, and global warming was part of the discussion, and there were as many hardliners for as again.
Sure,
but there are people so locked into positions that they just don't accept new information. Dr. Don, what's the balance in the scientific community? I don't know that you've got a pulse on this, but thinking is changing, I think, as they move from the idea of global warming to now climate change, and now we see articles like this that are meant to reinforce their presumptions but actually destroy them, this idea of retrospective prediction. I mean, predicting what happened yesterday, contradiction in terms. What's the balance in the world of science today? Is this becoming neutralized, or are we still proponents of global warming generally?
It's a loaded question, a two-part question. I think politically we are still very much in the global warming, climate change mentality, mm-hmm. Because it serves a purpose, internationally and
economically
around the world.
Economically
yeah. And redistribution of wealth, and that's the primary motivation behind legislation like this. So if the global climate change, you know, folks would have their way, then, you know, we would be taxed for any amount of carbon that you produce.
Our so-called carbon footprint.
Whether your automobile would be taxed, the trucks would be taxed for transportation, the trains, everything would be taxed. And it's just another form of tax, another form of redistributing the wealth. Now, from a scientific point of view, there are strong arguments, obviously, against global warming and against, these climate changes. And every time, a proponent for global warming or climate change pops up, it seems to be another person or another group on the other side saying, hey, wait a minute, have you thought about this? I mean, the whole reason for this retrospective study in the first place was because scientists-based old models used to think, well, you know, by this time, the Earth would have warmed up by 10 degrees. Well, the Earth didn't warm up by 10 degrees. In fact, the Earth's overall temperature remained relatively stable during the time period. Mm-hmm. And so that prompted these climate folks to go back and say, well, can we fix our models based on the new data? And so that's what they've done, and in the process, they've said, "Well, these parameters now seem to be more of a contribution to our climate than carbon dioxide."
Mm-hmm. So it was maybe a month or two ago, we talked about an article from a British scientist who was one of the original scientific minds that kicked off this consideration of global warming, and basically he went back and said, I was wrong.
Yeah, no, that's right. And that's because of that data that we talked about several months ago, that leveling off of temperatures over a 10-year period, that this study was done. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of the result of that. It's not bad for a scientist, to be able to say, oh, well, our models are wrong. aren't predicting what we thought they would predict, let's go back and fix them. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just good science.
Yeah,
I mean,
see, there's two ways. In this article, they've maybe adjusted the computer model, but they're saying our original prediction was right, but we have different reasons for that happening now, which seems to me odd logic.
Yes, now they're blaming other things like, yeah. You know, methane, which, you know, methane can be, we produce methane every time we drill a hole in the ground. Mm-hmm. You can hit a methane patch and release methane, but cows release methane as well. And we, you know, so are we going to, you know, put a tax on cows again? Yeah, and ozone and hydrocarbon, I mean, the hydrofluorocarbons are going away. I mean, that has been past 30, 40, 50 years in, you know, a political hot potato, and legislation has been put into place, as I was saying earlier, to replace those compounds. That's another whole interesting story in itself. But
well, do you think fluorohydrocarbons are dangerous? If not for the atmosphere, just for human beings in some other way?
Oh, they've been proven to be totally innocuous. Oh,
innocuous, okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, you could breathe the stuff and it won't, you know, it wouldn't hurt you. Mm-hmm. The stuff that they've replaced in, let's say, your automobile, for example, instead of, you know, the
cooling system, air conditioning.
Yeah, but instead of 12, is toxic. Mm-hmm. It's you know, corrosive to your system. I mean, not the automobile system, and so they've had to add other types of things into the mix to make the stuff work as long as, you know, mm-hmm. R12 was working. But, you know, to humans, it was the old stuff was innocuous, but now the new stuff is caustic, and, you know, of course we need to handle it, you know, much more carefully. So we've replaced a relatively innocuous material, a material that doesn't break down, which was part of the problem, and light enough that it went up to the upper atmosphere, so it's been claimed, and then was claimed to destroy the ozone. But we've found since that the ozone layer actually has holes and windows that float around the Earth and get created, and is more responsive to sunspots than it is to anything that's man's doing.
Do we generally overestimate the effect of man's doings, of things that we bring on ourselves, that somehow nature has already taken all this into consideration and is doing the balancing act it was designed to do?
Well, I think that's we do tend to overreact, and if there is a political agenda or a economic agenda, in obviously in the case of fluorocarbons, there was an economic agenda, mm-hmm. because the DuPont's patent on R12 had run out, and so they had developed new materials to replace R12 refrigerant. And the other refrigerants, 22. And so, gee, if you want a proprietary position, you've got to come up with a reason for it. Now, mm-hmm. that sounds sinister. And who would, you know, really think that you know, chemical company would do this? But in fact, they do it all the time. They lobby our government representatives to pass legislation that is favorable for them.
Well, they do what it takes to generate more business, generating more income, keeping the stockholders happy. So it's really, yes. really at base an economic argument that we're running up against here. And that's the motivation, because I'd love to see some integrity from science and from politicians. Do you suppose that the decision makers in Washington and in other legislatures around the world who are dealing with global warming honestly understand the scientific viewpoint, and they're just saying, well, that helps us redistribute wealth, which is our real goal, or are they buying into the science, do you suspect? I mean, are they honest or are they not?
Oh, I can't say that everybody's non-honest, but I think some of them are definitely honest and would like to know the truth. It's just that the information that they get is filtered, for one thing. And if they have an agenda, you know, as we know, if you have an agenda politically, you're going to find any excuse you can to, you know, or arguments you can to support your agenda and get your program through. So I think certainly a lot of that has gone on.
Interesting. Don joins us every Monday, and we post our conversations under the Audio Archives tab on our website, BrokenRoadRadio.com. This one will be there, too, in just a few hours, with a link to this article. If you're so inclined to read it, we'll give you that opportunity by linking to it. And Don, also a member of the board at CreationMoments.com. How's the ministry going these days? Busy and productive?
Oh, we're constantly trying to do things. We have the 1 minute program up, and it seems to be well accepted. It's getting more and more exposure, we keep producing new programs and
there are blogs on the website, and there are resources on the website. Lots of reasons to check out creationmoments.com. You can link there, too, from our website at brokenroadradio.com. And, of course, you hear the two-minute program with Ian Taylor here several times a day, Creation Moments. In fact, 9:50 this morning, Central, will run another one of those programs. And now a shorter one. Is that getting onto secular radio, Don? Do you know yet?
I don't know. It's actually the fellow that's producing it. It's a Salem radio fellow.
Okay.
And he's got a lot of his friends within the Salem organization, you know, playing it. So I don't think it's gotten on the secular because we're not in a position to actually buy time.
Yeah, I see. I got you. Yeah.
And even though it's a, you know, we call it a public service announcement, I don't think those in secular radio would necessarily agree.
Well, that some few would because they're looking for material. It wouldn't be a bad idea just to go and, you know, send it out there and make it available. But of course, Creation Moments too, celebrating 50 years, 50th anniversary this year, or was it last year?
No, this year is our 50th anniversary. Okay. So we're going to have a celebration at we're still looking for a venue, actually, for our celebration. But we're going to call in a well-known speaker to come and speak and have like a reception. And that's going to be in September. So as we get more information on that, I'll pass it on.
Yeah, please. And of course, offices up here in northern Minnesota for Creation Moments, too. And we'll look forward to that. And we look forward to Don every Monday. Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas, biochemist and member of the board of Creation Moments. Don, thank you so much. As always, appreciate having you along. And Heike and David, I guess you're still there. You've been kind of quiet, you guys.
I am still here. I'm just cogitating, and I'm reflecting on the portion of the global warming debate and argument that takes place in political meetings and in more social settings, where most people, all they know is the first two words of the argument, and they're either for it or against it. And they don't want to know anymore. I mean, then that's a problem. That disturbs me. And, you know, and people who are otherwise relatively intelligent, and if you say the words global warming, their eyes light up and say, yeah, isn't that wonderful? Or, oh, this is an absolute hoax. And those are the people that, you know, it's like they will never give this debate up. They will never... And, you know, the results can change. The results can, they can remodel, they reformulate the models. They can reformulate. A friend of mine was working on a program one time where he was using past performance of racehorses to predict future events. Now, when you go to the track, that's what you try to do every time. But your odds are still between 30-1 and 8-1 or whatever, based on who puts the money down. Got nothing to do with past events.
A lot of random things going on that you really can't account for.
And it's all about the guy who's selling the yellow sheet for $8. And he's made his predictions about who's coming in first, second, and third. And all you have to do is give him $8 and you've got the knowledge. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not going to work. It doesn't work.
It's a complex problem, and well worth a continual look and looking at new information and new results. And rather than... There's a word I'm searching for, but these scientists have done in this article for natural climate change. It's a nature.com article, and again, it will be shown as a link on the conversation with Dr. Don once we get a post a little later today. Don, thanks again. Appreciate having you around, and we'll check with you next Monday, okay?
Okay, that sounds good. It's been fun again this morning.
Oh, yeah. Always a good time. See you, Don.
All righty.
Music continues from After the Chase. Good morning to you.